The set aside prayer. God, help me set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially, let me let go of all of my old ideas, absolutely, all of them, completely, absolutely. And show me my old ideas all the time so I can let go of them. And help me carry your message tonight. Amen.
Amen.
Okay. Tonight we are on more about alcoholism. We're only going to cover the jaywalker because there's so much in there. And then next week we'll finish with Fred. More about alcoholism is designed to show the alcoholic who's reading this that they have no power to keep from drinking. Now, if they don't understand that, they're not going to do the rest of the book. And this is designed, and when they're talking about no power, they're talking about no power. Now, a lot of people out there are saying, yeah, I don't have any power, but they think they have 1% or 2%. And if you hold on to any power, you're going to die. You're not going to make it. 100% complete defeat. And this chapter is laid out where they start with the man of 30 years who then retires and decides, since he's gone 30 years without drinking, that he can drink again, and he's dead within 4 years. And the theme of that story is that if you're an alcoholic, you're always going to be an alcoholic. Yeah. You're never going to be able to control how much you drink again, ever. Anybody agree with that?
Yeah.
All right. Everybody agrees with that, but everybody who agreed with that has taken a drink sober, knowing that was true. So what they do in the rest of this chapter is they're trying to hammer home that we have a queer mental twist that tells us right before we drink it's okay. We don't drink on the truth. We drink on a lie. And we tell ourselves the lie. And the lie is, it's okay. Now, if you tell yourself it's okay when you know it's not okay, then willpower won't work. Triggers won't work. You can write out all your triggers and take them with you to the liquor store. That's a joke. It's not going to work. Other people can help you, but they don't have the power. The power has to come from God. God's the only thing that can tell me bad idea, Michael. Now, God works through people, but it has to start with my seeking him. So they're getting you ready in the big book. Now, remember, this was written, there was no AA. And they're getting you ready, if you're reading this book, to be able to talk about God and we agnostics, and that lack of power is your problem to live, and you have to have God in your life. And people don't like to hear about God, so they're going to tell you, change your mind. And in that chapter, which we're going to study, it tells you where God is and why he doesn't have power. Now, you can pray all day long. You can get down on your knees all day long. You can ask God to direct your life all day long. But if you stop and you start running the show, God's not going to interfere. AA is a program which is designed to teach me the principles that I need to do every day to follow through on what the New Testament tells me I need to do. I need to seek God and have him direct me and follow him. And these steps are designed to tell me when I'm not doing that and when I'm back itself and how to get back to God. It's a very powerful. It ties together the principles in the New Testament with the spiritual principles in the big book. People don't like that, that's fine, but that's the way it was written. And it says on page 84, we entered the world of the Spirit. And we're in the world of the Spirit on page 84 because we're with God, and then we want to stay there all day long. Now when we're reading more about alcoholism, you're in the world that you created, and it's not pretty. And you shouldn't feel good when you come in here. And a lot of people don't know why. They're going to tell you why on page 60. But they're getting you ready on the first 43 pages to let go of the idea, if you have it, that you're ever going to have any power to keep from drinking. And you have to accept that, not in your mind, because knowledge won't help you, in your heart. And you have to hit bottom completely in terms of thinking you have any power to fix this. This book was not written for people who are having a bad day. This was written for people who had a hopeless condition of mind and body. And it says seemingly, because when I came here, I had a hopeless condition of mind and body, but it's not, it doesn't seem hopeless today. Why? Because I have this book and I've worked the steps and I have people in my life and I have these tools to seek God today. Now, they're also going to tell us that we never, ever, ever have the power to choose not to drink ever again. Well, what the heck does that mean? Why come to AA? You're never going to have the power on your own. You're always going to have it through your relationship with God. This book is about a relationship with a power, and the power solves the problem. So we're talking about relationships, and right now they're talking about the relationship with yourself and more about alcoholism that tells you it's okay to drink. They use three examples: Jim, the jaywalker, and Fred. Jim, we read last week. Jim was really a good guy. He was perfect in every way. He owned an automobile agency. He had a commendable war record. Everybody liked him. He was great, except he had a nervous disposition. Get the hint? And he started drinking at 35, and he was in the asylum many times. And they went and worked with Jim, and they explained to him that he was an alcoholic, and he understood it. And then he got drunk 8 more times. And they asked him to tell the story. Now, the problem with Jim is that he agreed he was a real alcoholic and he was in serious condition, but he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. He didn't have a relationship with God. So Jim goes to work to the agency he used to own. You think he was happy about that? He goes there and he shows up on Tuesday morning. Monday, he was probably drunk. He had words with the boss, which he says weren't that bad. Do you believe that?
No.
And he was irritated. So he has a brilliant idea, because Jim's an alcoholic. He's going to go sell a car in the country where there's a bar where he could have lunch. Get the picture? See, Jim's already planning his relapse. But if you asked him, he would say, yeah, I'm going to the country. I'm going to go to the bar. There's going to be somebody there who needs a car, you see? He's telling himself a series of lies. And he has a sandwich, and he orders a glass of milk. And he's sitting there, and then he says, suddenly, the thought crossed his mind that he could put whiskey with milk and it would be okay. Now, do you think that started right then? It started when he went to work on Tuesday morning. He was irritable, he was unhappy, he was pissed off, he was miserable. And he was seeking the ease and comfort of alcohol, and he told himself a series of lies. And then suddenly the thought came in. Now, why didn't he say, bad idea? Here's what he says. I vaguely sensed I was not being any too smart, but felt reassured as I was taking it on a full stomach. He could only think about the relief alcohol was going to give him. He couldn't think of what it was going to do to him. Now, if you have this disease, and we're reading this and we're laughing, but this is serious business. And if you truly understand this, if you're sober today, you should get down on your knees tonight and thank God. Mm-hmm. Just a sober day for an alcoholic is a miracle. So then he did this experiment. It went so well, he kept drinking and he got drunk. And it said, that started, we're at the bottom of 36, a journey to the asylum for Jim. That's what they called it. It was for insane people. It was insane for Jim to drink, wasn't it? And he said he had much knowledge about himself as an alcoholic. You can read the big book on the way to the liquor store. It won't help you. Now, studying the big book and following the directions and getting a sponsor and working the steps and staying connected to people in AA will give you the power from God, the relationship with God in prayer, meditation, seeking him always, you see. But just knowledge that I'm an alcoholic won't help you. Anybody here knew they was an alcoholic and drank? And for reasons we're not drinking, we're easily pushed aside in favor of the foolish idea that he could take whiskey if only mixed it with milk. Now remember, our ideas kill us. Why? They're my ideas. And we don't want to confuse my ideas with God's ideas. Now God would have said, bad idea. But I don't think Jim was seeking God when he wanted the whiskey and milk, you see? He was separated from God. How was he separated from God? He was angry, he was irritable, he was discontented. He was self-will run riot, you get it? And so God couldn't work in his life. So it says, whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. And insanity is the lack of proportion of the ability to think straight. Right before you take the first drink, an alcoholic can't think straight. Never can without God. Now, if you think you can do it without God and living on a spiritual basis, try it. Most people can't. That's why they come back. And then the big book says, we don't care what you do, but if that's your problem, if you do this, this worked for us. So you do this and tell us if it worked for you. Big book doesn't tell you anything you have to do. It just tells you what they suggest you do if you want what they had. Now they had a power to think straight. And guess what? You can have the power to think straight at 8 in the morning, but you may not have it at 10. So this is a continuous program of recovery. You're never cured. You have to constantly seek your relationship with God no matter how long you're sober. And the more emotional sobriety you have, the more relationship you have with God, the easier it is to keep doing it. So we don't. Our goal isn't here is to see people stay sober. Our goal in this meeting is for you to have a relationship with God and emotional sobriety and have peace and be able to live a life of joy and peace and contentment with God and of service to God and others. So they say you may think this is an extreme case. Probably a lot of people do. They think, well, this wasn't me. They can't see the truth. But if you can see the truth, it says this kind of thinking has been characteristic of every single one of us. We have sometimes reflected more than Jim did upon the consequences, but there is always the curious mental phenomenon, that's what they called it, that runs parallel with sound reasoning. So you wake up at 9 o'clock, you say you're not gonna drink, right? You have sound reasoning. You're going through the day, but you got this curious mental phenomenon that's fighting with your sound reasoning. And by 4 o'clock, your sound reasoning loses. And you drink or you use. You see, so we have to have something that's greater than my sound reasoning. Because my sound reasoning won't work alone. Did that happen to anybody? Has that ever happened? Our sound reasoning failed to hold us in check. The insane idea worn out. Then they talk about getting deliberately drunk. Anybody do that? Justified by nervousness, anger, worry, depression, jealousy, or the like. Now, what you're really justified is by the feelings you have for being a self-centered you-know-what. And when you're self-centered, you're nervous, you're angry, you're worried, you're depressed, you're jealous and the like, you're irritable, restless, and discontent. And then you say, I tried so hard, I'm such a good guy, don't they understand me, my motives are so good. Wow, I worked so hard, they don't care. And then you justify your drinking, which is insane. So we don't want to live like that. And it says, our behavior, this is the bottom of the page, is a very famous story. And we call it the jaywalker. I don't know where it came from, but like Stu and I were talking in the 30s, they were starting to drive cars and jaywalking was bad. And so there were a lot of jaywalkers because they probably didn't, people were running across the street trying to beat the cars. But anyway, this, I don't know where they got it, but it's been around AA folklore forever, and it's in the big book. Now see if this isn't true. My behavior is as absurd. Absurd behavior is not good. It means it makes no sense. It's incomprehensible. A normal, sane person cannot understand why an alcoholic would go in a liquor store. They know what's going to happen. They're watching you. And they say, this is insane, and yet we do it. With respect to the first drink, is that of an individual with a passion for jaywalking? He has a passion for jaywalking. Now, we had a passion for alcohol and drugs. Why? Because they gave us a sense of ease and comfort. And they treated the spiritual malady, which was my separation from God. Did anybody have that?
Yes.
Did alcohol give you peace,
yes,
make you feel good? But it stops working, right? Mm-hmm. because it doesn't work after a while. We keep seeking it, but our lives keep getting worse. The consequences keep getting worse. He gets a thrill out of skipping in front of fast-moving vehicles. This is how he gets his fun. He's a skipper, and he loves it. I made it again. How'd that work out? He enjoys himself for a few years, so he's doing this all the time, like we drank, in spite of friendly warnings. Did anybody have friendly warnings? Consequences?
Yes.
Some of them were unfriendly, weren't they? Up to this point, you would label him as foolish. Now, I wrote that he had a passion, our passion for alcohol. Passion is a strong and barely controllable emotion. Up to this point, you would label him as a foolish chap. Anybody agree with that? And he had queer ideas of fun. People were watching him skipping in front of cars and saying, what the hell's wrong with this guy? And so luck then deserts him. See, luck ran out. Do you remember when luck started to run out with your drinking? And he is slightly injured several times in succession. So he's getting hit now. So a normal person won't run in front of a car now, right? Well, what does he do? You would expect him, if he were normal, to cut it out. But not the jaywalker, the alcoholic. He's hit again, and this time he has a fractured skull. Within a week, he leaves the hospital. He says, well, I survived the fractured skull, right? I could do it again. And that's how we think. You know, it wasn't that bad. You know, I was only in the hospital for a week. They took good care of me. I had insurance. Within a week after leaving the hospital, a fast-moving trolley car breaks his arm. So he's getting a lot of consequences. So here's what he does. Every alcoholic does this. We decide to stop jaywalking for good. And you can pass a lie detector test when you do it. I'm fairly convinced when an alcoholic decides, solemn oath, that they're going to quit drinking with no reservation, they could pass a lie detector test. And then yet an hour later, they're drunk. See, we can't follow through on the decision. We don't have the power. But we're not bad people, we're just powerless. So he decides to stop jaywalking for good, but he breaks both legs. See, I can't follow through on the decision to not to drink. I don't have the power. And I hammer that home all the time. No power. The whole program is about power. There is one who has all power. May you find him now. That is God. It doesn't say wait 6 months to find God. Find him right now. Why? Because you have no power to follow through on the decision not to drink. How long do you have when you come to AA till you get the power to drink where you're not going to drink? Think about it. People spending months and months and months waiting to do their steps or the fourth step or third step. How long do you have sober before your mind's going to tell you, get a drink, and you have no power? That's why they did the steps in 5 days in the hospital with Dr. Bob. They did them right away. On through the years, his conduct continues, accompanied by his continual promises. We always have promises. Anybody make promises? To be careful. He's going to be careful now, or he's going to keep off the streets altogether. But finally, can no longer work. You see the progression of his alcoholism? See the progression? His wife leaves him. He's held up to ridicule. So now he's really defeated. And now he's going to try every known means to get the jaywalking idea where? Out of his head. We're trying to get the idea that we, about drinking or using, out of our heads. We can't do it. He shuts himself, he locks himself up in an asylum, hoping to mend his ways. But the day comes out and he races in front of a fire engine which breaks his neck. Such a man would be crazy, wouldn't he? You think our illustration is too ridiculous, but is it? It's very sobering when you read this, isn't it? You look back on your life. We have been through the ringer. The ringer is not good, by the way. It's what they used to put the clothes through, and they would wring all the water out. And we went through the ringer. It's not fun. Anybody go through the ringer in this room?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Anybody go through it twice?
Yes.
We have to admit, if we substitute alcoholism for jaywalking, this illustration would fit us exactly. It's a great example. And we should never forget this. You never want to forget your powerlessness. You never want to get away from your powerlessness. However intelligent we may have been in other respects, where alcohol has been involved, we've been strangely insane. It's strong language, but is it true? Remember, insanity is inability to see the truth. Now, the big book is very good at describing lack of choice and lack of control up to page 43. But what they don't tell us till page 52 is about the unmanageability of our life being self-centered that causes the life to be unmanageable and makes us drink to get the effect of alcohol. They want to hammer home our powerlessness of choice and control, and then they're going to hit us with our real problem, which is our self-centeredness and our separation from God. And the big book says when we straighten out with our relationship with God and become God-centered, then we don't have to worry about the mental obsession to drink, and we don't have to worry about the loss of control because we won't drink. You see how it works? But they're focusing on the mental and physical aspects to get you to understand you're powerless. It says, yes, what you tell us is true, but it doesn't fully apply. We admit we have some of these symptoms, but we have not gone to the extreme you fellows did. You know, there's always a meeting I go to where there's a new person and they have to say something, and they want to tell us either how long they were sober before, or they want to tell us they didn't get a DUI and they still have a wife and they still have a job, that they're not that bad. Mm-hmm. Now, telling me you're not that bad when you're coming to AA is not the right attitude. The attitude should be, I'm completely defeated, I'm desperate. You see, and the ego wants us to make us look good because we want everybody to approve us. And that's what kills us. I hope this makes sense. And having been sober before should remind you how powerless you are because you took the drink again. We have not gone the extremes you fellows did, for we understand ourselves so well. This is great. After what you have told us, that such things cannot happen again. Remember, Roland Hazard spent a year with Dr. Young, and he understood the working of his mind perfectly. And he was drunk 3 days after a year of therapy. Understanding myself won't help me. I just understand myself with my self-centered mind. How can that work? See, the mind that's going to lie to me is not the mind I can use to get better. I have to get rid of all those ideas out of my mind and replace it with new. That's what the steps 4 through 9 are all about. Self-knowledge will not fix us. What about fear? Fear won't fix us because right before we drink, we're not afraid because our mind tells us it's okay. Now, in Bill's story, he said fear sobered him for a bit, and he had self-knowledge. He understood the disease, but he couldn't get sober. Remember when Bill W. in 1934 got drunk in November, there was no hope for him. And remember, Abby Thatcher, God sent Abby Thatcher to Bill W. so we'd be here tonight. Abby Thatcher had been an alcoholic his whole life and went to the Oxford group, and they had the spiritual principles of their 6 steps, and they were trying to practice fundamental Christianity. And he was told he had to witness to somebody, and he went to Bill W. and he told him about his program of religious idea and program of action. And then Bill argued with him drunk that he didn't need God. And he could outlast Abby, he thought. And then eventually, Abby warmed down, and the idea came to Bill that maybe there was a God. And he says, the icy intellectual mountain that I had built between him and his creator melted. And he felt better because then he didn't have to rely on himself anymore. And then he worked the steps, and we're here tonight. It says, we have not lost everything in life through drinking yet, and we certainly do not intend to. Thanks for the information. So here they're going to hammer home in this next paragraph what they want us to understand. That may be true of certain non-alcoholic people. Remember, hard drinkers can quit if they're given sufficient reason for doing so because they don't have to quit on a spiritual basis. What makes you a real alcoholic, remember, is that you cannot quit drinking on a non-spiritual basis. You have to have a spiritual basis of living or else. And that spiritual basis is the principles of the 12 steps, the relationship with God. It says, They may be able to stop or moderate because their brains and bodies have not been damaged as ours were. But the actual alcoholic, everybody said they're an alcoholic here, right? Now, I've gone through the difference between a real alcoholic and an actual alcoholic, because some people have to say they're real alcoholics, and then I'm a real alcoholic. A real alcoholic is just someone who realizes they're an alcoholic. You're an alcoholic long before you realize it. But when you realize it, you have lost the control and lost a choice, and you realize you're a real alcoholic, then there's hope for you. Does this make sense? If you can't fully continue your innermost self that you're an alcoholic, that's the first step in recovery. You're not going to admit you're powerless over alcohol. Step one doesn't say you're alcoholic, does it? It just says you're powerless over it. So you have to understand what makes you an alcoholic to understand that you're powerless over it. And I've hammered that home tonight. You've heard enough. It says, but the actual potential alcoholic, with hardly an exception, don't try to be the exception because you're not, will be absolutely unable to stop drinking on the basis of self-knowledge. It's in a squiggly writing. You're not going to be able to understand yourself well enough to say no to alcohol. It's never going to happen. This is a point we wish to emphasize and reemphasize. Now, when you work the steps, you get knowledge of yourself separated from God and what you want to be rid of so you can be the person God created. So we have to do analysis in 4 through 9 of everything that's blocking us from God. But understanding myself and my triggers or my parents or whatever, my maybe bedwetting, I can't remember, whatever that is not going to keep me sober. It's not going to work. This is a point we wish to emphasize and reemphasize, to smash home upon our alcoholic leaders, and has been revealed to us at a bitter experience. So they describe the jaywalker. I hope you found this information helpful. You know how you know you'll find it helpful? You'll go home tonight, you'll want to read more of the book. You'll go home, you'll want to get on the podcast, you're going to want to find the spots, you're going to want to start working the steps. You're not going to want to delay any longer. How can you tell when you've really taken the first step? You're on step two. You're saying, making a decision in step three. You're writing on paper in step four. Now, if you've been an alcoholic and you've made your life unmanageable, it shouldn't take you long to understand step one. And if you come to meetings and you believe that there's a power that can help you because you see people in the room that have done this and gotten better, then you're willing to believe that there's a power that can help you. And if you lived a life run on self-will and your life was a effing mess like mine was, it won't take you long to be convinced that a life run on self is never going to work. And then you make a decision that God's going to be your director. That's all you have to do. Now, having done all that, what has happened? Nothing. Because the decision has to be followed through by action. And that's what the rest of the steps you do the rest of your life. Andrew was talking about the surrender in step three. You have to do that every day. And how do you know if you're surrendering to step three and make a decision that God's going to be your director every day? You're praying. You're meditating. You're taking action to work the steps. You're talking to somebody. You're working with someone else. Does this make sense? So I hope you see how powerful this is. I'm going to open it up now, and then we're going to read about Fred. Now, Fred is a great example because Fred was someone who everything was going perfectly. Perfectly. And yet he still couldn't stop drinking, and we're going to see why. Thank you.